Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Israel Unplugged. This is Josh Wander from Yerushalayim, Yir HaKodesh, and I'm here with my co-host, Rabbi Moshe Lichtman from Beit Shemesh.
Yes, hello, hello. Good to be back, and we hope you enjoy today's show.
It's great to be back, and both of us in studio with real microphones that we can sound like we are professional instead of being on the road somewhere and in the car and on vacation. So Baruch Hashem, we're both back in our homes. So Israel Unplugged, if you don't know, is where you can get the unadulterated facts of where we're holding in the redemptive process, focusing primarily on the ingathering of the exiles. We are a live show, and we encourage you to call in with your questions and your comments. If you are unfortunately stuck in North America, I would ask you to call in. The number is 301-768-4841. That's 301-768-4841. And if you're fortunate enough to be here in Eretz Israel, we also want to hear from you. And the number is 02-650-0151. Again, that's 02-650-0151. We have a very exciting show planned for you today. We also have a very special guest that we've invited to come on, and he has some amazing things to say. We're going to be speaking about a concept of whether the temple, and this is a very theoretical concept, but we're going to speak about the idea of the temple coming from the heavens. Are we supposed to wait for some sort of magical moment, for some messianic time in which things are just going to happen by themselves, or are we supposed to be active participants in the process? Are we supposed to take concrete actions to make things happen? And this I think is one of the key elements which holds people, Jews around the world, back from coming home and being involved in this process, because they don't realize that they can be active participants in the process. We're going to speak about that. Again, we want you to call in. We want you to hear your comments and questions. So please make sure to call in during the show. Please stick with us, because we are going to be back just shortly, and we are going to have Rabbi Danny Myers from Ramat Beit Shemesh speak with us.
Did a nice Jewish girl from Delaware end up living in Israel? Shalom, I'm Natalie Sapinski. Join me on my show, Returning Home. Meet different people who have moved to Israel. Hear their personal stories, their highs, their lows, and everything in between. Each week, we talk to experts on immigration and the process of moving to Israel. Listen to Returning Home every Thursday, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Israel Unplugged. I neglected during our intro to mention very, very important things. First of all, I just wanted to mention before that, as a matter of introduction, we're in a very special period of the Jewish calendar, a period in which it's a lot like a roller coaster. We go through Tisha B'Av, the 3 weeks, the 9 days, Tisha B'Av, a period of intense mourning. And then we flip over all of a sudden to Tu B'Av, and we leave the mourning period, and we start going into a period of happiness. And it leads into Elul and leads into the high holy days of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. All this is like a real world. Because, and by the way, within the nationalistic calendar, we also have such a thing. We have Yom HaZikaron, Memorial Day, which is a very sad day where we memorialize all the people, all the soldiers that gave their lives, the ultimate sacrifice for our country. And it flows right into Yom HaTzma'ut, into Independence Day, where we celebrate the independence of our new state. This is something that which is very common in Judaism. I think it's very strange. I think for those non-Jews out there, don't have this idea of mixtures of mourning and happiness in the same breath. But this is the period that we're in, and there's a lot to discuss about that. I want, before I get into the details here, to mention two very important websites, actually three very important websites. The first website is that of my co-host, Rabbi Moshe Lichtman. The website is toratzion.com, toratzion.com. And over there you have a list of all of his books that he's translated, amazing works on Zionism, on religious Zionism, on the concept of the Jews coming back home. Everybody should go to this site. They should look it over. And what else should they do, Rabbi Lichtman?
Yeah, and there is a donation button, and I am about to put out another book, a very, very important classic book on religious Zionist thought called Ayelet HaShachar by Rav Yaakov Filber. And I need a little bit of help financially to be able to put out that book. So if anybody out there is listening, please go to my website, toratzion.com, and hit the donation button, and whatever you can give would be greatly appreciated.
And of course, if you have more questions about that and you're interested in a major sponsorship, you can contact him through that website as well. Our website is called bringthemhome.org.il. It's a mouthful. My co-host always forgets the IL part of it, which is fine. There are other ways to get to it. It's timetoleave.com, IsraelTorah.org. Lots of URLs. They all go to the same website, and that website includes this show as well as our other podcasts. It includes a blog. It includes many other aspects, including a video series. And that video series, I think, is quite unique. It's almost over 100 videos, I think, at this point, of prominent rabbis and rebbitzins speaking about the importance of the Jews coming back home today. Now, when we're speaking about videos, I have to mention the third thing, which is Rabbi Danny Meyer's video series. He has a YouTube series at Danny Meyer's. Is that correct?
I think so. Yeah, M-Y-E-R-S.
Okay. And you do videos. I think you do at least one a day. You do daily videos on a whole variety of subjects, including Daf Yomi and different philosophical ideas. And a few of the most recent videos that you have produced caught my eye because they were dealing with a subject which we often deal with on this show, which is, I'm just looking at one now, which is watching the redemption unfold, enough already, move on. These are names that he's entitled his videos. The concept of whether the man has a place to take concrete actions in bringing the redemption about, or is it something that many Jews around the world believe, which is we're supposed to just sit and pray and do our thing and wait for it to happen? Rabbi Myers, we invite you, we thank you for coming on the show, and we would love to hear what you have to say about this most important subject.
Okay, well, so nice to reconnect with the two of you, and thanks so much for having me. It's always a treat to be here with you too, and you, God should bless you with your holy work.
Amen.
Thank you.
So as you said so eloquently, very much there are different paths among our holy brothers in the Jewish nation about how proactive to be in general in life, and specifically regarding bringing about the redemption of the Jewish people. And I pretty much maintain that in all aspects, a person has to be proactive in terms of one's personal life, personal development, his physical development, his health, eating healthy, exercising. And when it comes to national redemption, it's the same thing. We have to be back here in Eretz Israel, in Israel. We have to go ahead, bring back every halacha that we possibly can. And there's about 200 commandments waiting for us regarding the temple, korbanot, laws of purity, tumah and tahala, having three different Sanhedrins, major courts of law on by the Migdash compound. That's not something that we wait for. We are proactive. So that is very much what I believe should be the Jewish approach from A to Z.
Let me interrupt you. How is it possible to have any other position? I have two questions. The first question is, when else in Jewish history, in our very, very long exile, could we do anything but sit and pray? Meaning we are in a unique position today in Jewish history where we are sitting and in Medinat Yisrael, in the state of Israel. We have back after 1967, we have gotten back the Temple Mount. We have access to all sorts of things in the land that we never had access to before. We have the ability to make, like I said, concrete, proactive actions in order to make things happen. Where else in the long exile could we have done anything? When we were in Europe, when we were in Spain, when we were in America, what else basically, what else could you do? Now we can actually do something. That's like the first half of my question.
Well, no, so the question is, well, what could have our brothers done 300, 400, 500 years ago? I just want to make sure I have clear the question.
Over 100 years ago, what could Jews have done? We know the story of the Ritziner Rebbe who understood that in order to preempt the redemptive process, he felt that it was necessary to go on a trip and to find the ancient Tchelet Dai. There were individuals, unique individuals that did unique things in order to try to bring about the Gula. But besides praying and studying the laws of the Mikdash, the laws of Eretz Yisrael that are related to the land of Israel, what else could be done? Today we're living in a unique time where we can actually do. Do you disagree?
So you're right. It's an excellent question. In each generation, what can a Jew do? And it depends on so many variables, so many factors that are involved. And each Jew living 500, 1,000, 1,500 years ago was, you know, standing in front of the heavenly court and has to answer those questions. Did I do everything I could? Thank God now in our generation, that excuse is really gone. How legitimate it was over the centuries, it's a great question. It depends on each person's financial assets, his physical abilities. Was he able to buy a ticket to a boat to make it to Israel or not? So it's a great question that each Jew over the last few thousand years had to deal with. To me, it's important. Rabbi Luchman beautifully says this in Eima Banim Smecha, where the original attempts to rebuild the Mikdash and come back to Israel existed for a short while, and then it became a philosophy to just wait it out. And that philosophy that became entrenched, that's where I have a major issue with. Each Jew, that's between him and God. Could he have done more or not? And that's a great question. But when it becomes a philosophy of pacifism, of just waiting, so that to me is very, very dangerous. And then that pacifist philosophy finds sources. So in my opinion, in specifically this area of moving on to a new chapter in Jewish history, our track record is not a glorious one, in my opinion. Going to Egypt. So according to the Midrash, how many Jews made it out of Egypt? What percentage?
20%.
One-fifth at the best, at most.
And one-fifth at the best, some say one-fiftieth. Everyone said it's not time to move from Egypt to Israel. Then the 80, then the 20% that made it out, the stars that made it out, and the Gedolim, the leaders of that generation, 10 out of 12 says, and these are the stars who made it out from the 20%. They said, you know, it's not time to move from the desert into Israel yet. And that's the stars and the leaders. Okay, and another generation, we made it into Israel. A few generations later, we're kicked out. And once again, out of the millions of people exiled, 40,000 Jews who were not that connected to the Masorah, they weren't the leaders of the generation, together with Ezra, the leader, and a few other leaders, Nehemiah, that's the group that made it back. Once again, the majority said it's time to stay in Bavel, in Persia, and God will bring us back. And now when I see again so many holy people, both who are here in Israel or are in exile, are saying just stay passive. And the next chapter in Jewish history, the temple, don't get involved in that. To me, it's just a continuation where the majority of our holy nation, whom I love dearly, just is in that mode of not transitioning to a new chapter. And our resiliency to excel in the present place where we're at in history sometimes is to our detriment, where we just excel instead of realizing we need to move on to the next chapter, whether it's physically moving out of Israel to Israel, or even if we're in Israel already, to move to the next chapter in history.
We have to move on to a next transition of our show, which is we're going to a hard break now. We're going to be right back with this. Rabbi Myers, we would appreciate it if you could stay with us.
Okay, thank you.
Shalom, everybody. Making a difference often takes just one moment and one person at a time. I am Orly Benny Davis, your show host on Israel News Talk Radios from Jerusalem with love. You'll be hearing people talking about politics, religion, social issues, and making a better tomorrow. Join me, Orly Benny Davis, for God and Country. From Jerusalem with love.
Wednesdays on Israel News Talk Radio.
Okay, welcome back to Israel Unplugged. I just wanted to pick up on something that Rabbi Myers spoke about, the fact that we keep on getting this wrong. We keep on making the same mistake, basically, the sin of the spies, the despisal of the Holy Land and not understanding when it's time to transition. So, you know, I don't want to give an excuse, but I do want to read for you what some very great rabbis said about that topic. What I'm about to quote is, I'm pretty sure, from Kol HaTor. Kol HaTor is an amazing sefer, amazing book, written by one of the disciples of the Gra. And it's really basically the Torah of the Gra on the redemptive process. So he says as follows: we must know and understand from the very outset that the more we engage in the holy labor of ingathering the exiles and building Jerusalem, the more the Sitra Achra — now Sitra Achra means the other side, the evil side, meaning the spiritual forces up in heaven that want to stop good things from happening — the more the Sitra Achra tries to disrupt and thwart our efforts with his principal weapons, which is uprooting the truth and preventing the sanctification of God's name. And then he goes on to say, realize how strong the Sitra Achra is. He even succeeded in hiding the danger of the klipot from our holy patriarchs. What does that mean? He hid the klipa, which means the husk, the negative side, of Yishmael from Avram. And as Avram didn't recognize that Yishmael was not part of the Masorah, so to say. And he hid the klipa of Esav from Yitzhak, and the klipa of the Trafim, which were those idols, from Yaakov. And then he says the following statement: when the footsteps of Mashiach arrive, the Sitra Achra, again, the evil forces in heaven, becomes very powerful, smiting even Torah scholars with blindness. And Rav Elio Gutmacher — this is brought in Abadim Smecha — he was one of the great disciples of Rabbi Akiva Eger, one of the greats, one of the first religious Zionists, the rabbis who called for the Jews to return to the land of Israel. And he said the same thing: one could recognize how crucial this matter of settling the land is by the fact that the klipa, again, this husk, this physical, this spiritual being or power up in heaven that tries to stop good things from happening, the klipa gains strength even among the most righteous individuals in order to nullify this good. And this is because the klipa's entire strength depends on exile. When the exile expires, so will the klipa. And therefore, he's sort of like hanging on for life. He's trying to get us not to come back to Eretz Yisrael, because that's the geula, that's the redemption of the Jewish people. And then his show is over. So he's like trying his hardest to convince people, big tzaddikim, that this is not the right thing to do. And we have to recognize this so we know to fight it and not to go along with this. And this is exactly what you were talking about before.
How fascinating is it that the anti-Zionist movement uses that exact argument. They speak about the Sitra Achra, they speak about Masa Satan, when they're referring to the return of the Jewish people to their homeland. They just switch it, you know, turn it around on its head. It's unbelievable.
Yep.
Yeah, but I think it's important to note, because very often people talk about the resistance against returning to the homeland. But it's important that that's part of a bigger picture. It's not just resistance to return to the homeland. We have 6.8 million Jews now. In another year or two or three, we're going to have the majority of Jews here from around the world who are home. We've returned to the homeland, and we're returning in big numbers, and who knows what's going to happen that's going to bring even more home. But it's not returning to the homeland. It's not just the physical transition from exile to the homeland. It's we're moving to a new chapter. We might have 7, 8, 9, 10 million Jews here in the next couple of years, and I'm chas v'shalom afraid we still will be incapable of transitioning to the next chapter, which is the Mikdash and Korbano, because we settle in. And it could be settling in Persia, it could be settling in Egypt, or it could be settling in Eretz Israel as is. It's just an important point to note. The resistance is not just we don't leave exile and come home. We could be home. We can have 7, 8, 9, 10 million of us home. And the resistance is going to the new chapter of fulfilling the 613.
I always say that you can live in a community. There's a neighborhood here in Jerusalem that is known as Geula, which means redemption. You could live in Geula. You could be as far away from the redemption as possible. If you believe that living in Jerusalem in this year, 5781, is the same as living in a shtetl, some village in Europe 200 years ago, you're really oblivious to what's going on around you. And even though you're in a place called Geula, you're very, very far from the Geula.
Let me play devil's advocate. So maybe someone will say, okay, I understand we have to do our part and we have to come back to the land of Israel in order to initiate the redemptive process. But aren't there certain things that really we should leave up to God to do? Like, for example, building the temple. I mean, right now building the temple would probably lead to World War III. And I know, are we allowed to do that? Or maybe that's something that we have to just wait. Sort of like also in the Six-Day War. I mean, we didn't initiate the Six-Day War. We were forced into it. I mean, that was God's way of saying, okay, now it's time to conquer Jerusalem. Not yet to get the Temple Mount in terms of, you know, building the temple, but at least to be somewhat in control of the Temple Mount. Maybe the next stage is something that God's going to have to do, and it's really not up to us to do that. What do you think, Rabbi Myers?
Excellent question. So what we have to do here is the same thing we do with any sugya, with any topic in Jewish law. We go ahead, we examine all of the sources. We have to first overcome the exile mentality that we're waiting anything out. No, we have 613 mitzvot. The premise is we'll try to do every one of them. But wait a second, maybe there's certain mitzvot where the time hasn't come. We're built into that mitzvah itself. There are restrictions. That's possible. So when it comes to the Mikdash, wait, maybe the Mashiach Messiah has to build it. Let's look into those sources. Maybe we need Nevuah, prophecy. Let's look into those sources. Maybe halachically we're still in a state of Tum'ah, and therefore we cannot build it. Let's look into the sources. But it should be treated in the exact same way, with the same proactive approach, that let's go ahead, we have a mitzvah obligation to do this, all 613, so let's go. But it has to be a serious, rational, level-headed examination into every source involved. So you could go ahead, and Rav Lichtman deals with it beautifully in Eretz Yisrael, you know, in the Parsha, about, wait, the Shekhinah says that you only build a Mikdash when you have the majority of Jews. That's a great source. We don't have the majority yet. Let's analyze that. What is the Sefer Chinuch based on? Is this a lone opinion? Is this the majority opinion? What are his sources in our Masorah? The Second Temple, we didn't have majority. So what does this mean? Do we paskin like this? That's a good, rational discussion. A person goes through all the sources and says, you know what? Based on this and that, I'm now convinced that we have to build a Mikdash, and he shows me in a scholarly way, based on the sources, okay, we could discuss that. But I want to see some serious, good, healthy debate, where there are sources that talk about prophecy, talk about Mashiach building the Mikdash. Let's go through all of them. There's a famous Rashi that's going to come down from Shemaim. Let's look through the Aruch Haner, the name of Ben Smecha, and the Tefer Israel. Let's go through all the sources together. But the assumption
one of my
is,
biggest arguments yeah. That I make is when people start discussing these issues, I say to them, okay, let's just assume that you're right. The Mikdash Min HaShemayim, that the temple is going to come down from the heavens, the Messiah is going to appear out of the blue, that everybody, all the Jewish people are going to be transported miraculously on the wings of eagles. Let's say that's all true. Tell me one thing. How will you know after this magical Mashiach moment happens, how will you know all the laws of Kodshim, Taharos, Tuma, Tahara, all the laws that revolve around the temple? How will you know these? Do you think that there's going to be a magical chip that's going to go into your head and all of a sudden we're going to know all these laws? Of course, no matter where you are and what position you're in, you have to be learning these laws. If you believe sincerely that the Messiah can come at any moment and that the temple is going to come down from that, you need to prepare ourselves. And I think this was the position of the Chofetz Chaim, that even though he was stuck in Radin in Europe, he still understood that we need to start preparing at least on a level of learning.
I agree with you on two levels. A, that halachically you should be prepared, and if you really believe it's going to happen. And there's a pasuk in Devarim, l'shichno tidrishu v'atashama, that even if you're not going to be proactive and get involved in the building, at least seek it out intellectually. And that hopefully could further the process. So I totally agree. I go the next step further, and I think we have to be proactive here. But even if a person does not go that way, I agree. At least be involved in the sugya and the learning and the topic.
This is getting onto the subject of the Temple Mount and how we're supposed to relate to it. I am fortunate enough to live right across the street from it. And I tell people not everybody's in the position today to go run across the street with a hammer, a nail, and start to build. But we there are many great organizations that are involved on a daily basis in the temple service. Yesterday, I went out with my children. There's a short time. I'm going to have to save this for the next segment. We're running to the end of a hard break here. But I did an amazing thing yesterday with my children. We went out to the settlement of Ofra, and we searched for the ancient dye of Tolat Shani. And I want to talk about that just a little bit, and then we just stick with us, and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
This is Shai Ben-Tekoa. Each week I'll be webcasting to you from Judea, origin of the word Jew, a people besieged and beleaguered in every generation. Nazi Germany is but a memory, but in its place the world invented the phantom Palestinians as this generation's internationally authorized Jew killers. Tune in for a different slant on life in Israel, Phantom Nation, every Monday.
Hi, I'm Rabbi David Aaron. The soul basics are the most profound, the most essential, and yet often the most neglected in our education. Join me for Soul Talk on Israel's News Talk Radio and discover the secrets to love, spiritual growth, and personal power.
So before the break, I was discussing an activity that I did yesterday with my children. I went with a very special woman to the settlement of Ofra. And there is a very, very short season of the year, just a couple weeks, that there's a special worm that is stuck on a specific type of tree. It's a specific type of oak tree. And if you look, you have to look very, very carefully at the oak tree, at different parts of the leaves and the branches. And you can find the eggs of this worm. You could pull them off and you can save them. And that is one of the dyes which is necessary to use in the temple service. It's necessary for the parochet, it's necessary for the curtains, it's necessary for parts of the bigdei kuna, of the clothing worn by the Kohen in the temple. And I'm just thinking to myself, you know, people that live in America, Jews that live around the world, they don't have this opportunity to be involved in such a proactive way that, like, my children are just so excited to be able to pull these worms off of the trees in order to be used for temple service. It's absolutely invigorating. But I have a question. I was thinking to myself, what was I thinking years ago, going back over 35 years ago, when I was new to this land? I came here to study in yeshiva. I had no intention of moving here. And if I was put inside of my house, speaking to me, fast forward 35 years, and I was listening to this guy, I would say, this guy is out of his mind. What is he think? Like, he thinks all the Jews belong in Israel? Like this is not mainstream Judaism. At least it wasn't at the time. Maybe it's changed a little bit since then. But I was trying to think to myself, what could I have said to this boy of 35 years ago, this single boy at a Shabbat table, that could have convinced him that we are living in a different era today? And I still have not come up with the right answer. Any thoughts?
I'll let you start, Rabbi Myers. I'll take over afterwards.
It's a great question. I'll tell you an amazing story. I'm Zocher to teach around the corner from Luchman Shlita in Reishit, I don't know, about 17, 18 years. And there's a great story that one of the Rebbe's told, that he's giving over a shir. I think it made him a Seals Yesharim. And the Talmud was so excited about it. And then it turned out that he came back to the States to talk to his ninth grade Rebbe. Ah, such inspiration in Israel. We're learning Sylvia Sarin, Path of the Just. It's just, I can't put it down. It's changing my life and inspiring me. And the Rebbe, the ninth grade Rebbe, had a funny look on his face. And the Talmud was like, what? And the Rebbe didn't want to say, but the student pushed him. What? He said, in ninth grade, every day we started off our class, our shiur, our lecture, with what book? The Silat Yesharim.
Silat Yesharim.
And it turned out the student just wasn't ready to hear it. It wasn't that the Rebbe in Israel, the rabbi, was so much greater than the ninth grade Rebbe. Not the case at all. It just wasn't there. So that actually sounds a little depressing, what I'm saying. If that someone's not up to hearing, they're not going to hear it. But it's not true. It's not true. Because there's something, a mysterious force called Bechirat Chavshit, free will. And that free will, you don't know what you're going to say that's going to turn one person on and going to go over another person's head. Well, that same person that yesterday you said this idea to, the next day it's like, wow. So we have to go, think about the ideas, give it over to our holy brothers, wherever they are, around the world, and you just don't know when they'll be open to saying, wow, that's a nice idea, Rabbi Luchman. Hey, Josh, that's nice. I'm going to think about that. So we believe, we're believers. I always say Danny Myers about myself, I'm a Breslov Chassid. You say, what do you mean, Danny Myers? You're clean cut, you're clean shaven. You don't have payas. There's nothing about a Breslov Chassid that looks like you. But in terms of faith in our fellow Jews, I don't give up. You talk, you push forward, and yes, Hashem, with God's help, some percentage will hear the message.
Okay, so I say that, you know, obviously each person is different, and some things will turn on certain people. Sometimes it will be the intellectual. But I think at the beginning of the year, these students, you can't be too harsh with them and say, you know, it says in the Gemara in Ketuvot that anybody who lives in Chutz Laaretz, outside the land of Israel, is like an idol worshiper. That's just not going to work. It's going to turn them off. You can't start with things like that. What you should start with is tiulim. Go through the land of Israel. Fall in love with the land, but, you know, just walk around and feel. This is what happened with me. I also, like you, Josh, said, I had no intention of living in Israel when I came from my year in Israel. But you know what? I all of a sudden started feeling like I just feel at home. because I was no longer afraid or embarrassed about my yarmulke and my tzitzit. I felt like this, everyone around me was Jewish, and that's what started the ball rolling. I only got into the, you know, writing about and studying the actual sources about the importance of living in Israel way later. It was just falling in love with the land. You know, my mechutan, my son is married to the daughter of Rav Ari Waxman, right? He's one of the Rosh Yeshiva of Shishivat Shalvim. So he always tells over, he was very close with Rav Moshe Shapiro Zatzal. He used to go to his shir all the time. And he said that he brought one of his students, and his students asked, you know, what should we do to get the kids into the land of Israel? So he said, take them on Tiulim. He said, make them fall in love with the land. Make them feel a connection to the land. The sources, you know, for some people it does work. I mean, you know, I've taught many, many years and many, many students, and usually my Divrei Torah on Shabbos are about Eretz Yisrael. And somehow it sinks in. But I think the main thing is that they start feeling that they belong. They start feeling a connection to the land, to the people that live here, the army. They feel a pride, which they don't feel in Chutz Laretz, outside the land of Israel. They don't feel Jewish pride as much as you do here. It's small things like that that build up until finally the student wants to make the move. That's what I think about this.
I was actually on a tour today, and I took a group. And I was here on Har HaZeitim on the Mount of Olives. There's a treasure trove of Jewish history here, including some of the people that you just mentioned, including Rav Moshe Shapiro is over here and others. And I was by the two kvarim. I just thinking of what I said to these people as I was passing by. Because, you know, you go through these, there's 150,000 people, I always say, that are buried here with 150,000 stories. Each one of them has an entire life with an entire story. You can't go through all of them, but you try to take little snippets of each one's life. So when I got to the kever of Ruchama Shein, is famous for writing the book All for the Boss about her father, Rav Yaakov Yosef Herman. She's the sister-in-law of Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg. And when I got to her kever, I mentioned that one of her children, I think, told me that she used to wake up in the morning and she would say 10 words every morning. She would say, "Thank you, Hashem, for letting me live in Eretz Yisrael," every morning. That's what she would say. That's the story number one. Then we got a little bit further. We got to the kever of Rav Hutner. Rav Hutner is a student. He's buried next to the Altar Slobodka.
My father's Rebbe.
Yeah.
So Rav Hutner,
I mentioned the story that one of his students came to him. He was going on a world trip for fundraising or whatever it was. And he asked his Rebbe, "What do I do when we pray, we face towards Jerusalem? What do I do when I'm somewhere in the world and I don't know which direction Jerusalem is in, that which direction I should pray in?" And Rav Hutner answered him that you should close your eyes. You should turn around slowly 360 degrees in a circle. He says, when your heart starts beating faster, you know that you're facing Jerusalem. When a Jewish heart faces Jerusalem, it beats faster. So these are just some stories that you mix into these tours, and I think it really does have an effect, just exactly what you're saying.
Right. So, you know, there's another great story about Rav Hutner that Rav Lichtenstein used to say, that when Rav Hutner would take a trip to Israel, when he'd land, he would put on tefillin, even if he already put on tefillin, let's say, before he left, or if he put on tefillin on the plane, he would put them on again in Israel. And one of his students once asked him, "Rebbe, you already put on tefillin, you already davened, why are you putting on tefillin again?" He said, "Before I put on Chutz Laretz tefillin, now I'm putting on Eretz Yisrael tefillin." It's a totally different mitzvah. Totally different. That's actually this
week's parasha. That fits the Ramban. Of course.
Exactly. It's this week's parasha that the mitzvot are the real thing here in Eretz Yisrael. Let's Rabbi Myers, what do you want to add? Maybe.
No, I agree with what you're saying.
You only have 2 minutes, so give your elevator speech, quick.
Not just what you're saying is great. We're complex people. We take holistic approaches to every holy brother and come with whatever we can, emotional and motivation, intellectual motivation, national motivation. And Mi'etz Hashem, all of our holy brothers around the world have a spark in them and will help us bring them to the, come to the next chapter with God's help.
And yeah, may we see the building of the temple. Yiratzon, we say it every day. Yiratzon Fanecha, Shibana Beis Hamikdash B'mehera B'yameinu V'tein Chalkeinu B'Toratecha, right? Because only in Eretz Yisrael, when we have the Beis Hamikdash, will we have a real chelek in the Torah. B'mehera B'yameinu, may we see this very soon. And thank you so much, Rabbi Myers, for joining us and sharing your wisdom with us. And hopefully we'll meet in the temple very, very soon. I'm a Levi, by the way. I'm going to work there. I don't know about you guys.
Wow, that is amazing.
I'm looking forward to singing.
I can't wait to see you sing. That's great. And people say only until 50, but you know that's not true.
That's only for the hard work.
No, Rambam says it's only in the Midbar when they used to travel and carry things. Now, there's no age limit. It all depends on physical capability and singing capability.
Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. Just click the orange button at the top of the IsraelNewsTalkRadio.home page, log in as yourself or an anonymous guest, and join in on the fun. You'll meet other listeners from all over the world who listen to Israel News Talk Radio, and you can make new friends. Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. It's the closest you can get to being in the studio with us.
We love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candlelighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.